Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Monday. Hi. It's a rainy Monday. Yay. It's the 23rd of July, and we are thrilled to have you with us. We have been just stewing in our own juices over the last couple of days, waiting to get to the airwaves to talk about what's going on in our world. So we have a lot of pent-up anger and a conversation, and we're ready to go, and we're very, very excited, and we hope you are too. We welcome you to join in on the discussion, panel at WAMC.org if you'd like in on the fun. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our star-studded panel to you. Thank you, Alan. Our star-studded panel to you this morning. Libby Post is back.
Yay.
Our political consultant to the stars. She is. She's been away for a couple weeks. She's back, and we're thrilled to have her. Good morning.
I am so happy to be here.
I am thrilled to see you in your rightful position.
Thank you very much.
By the way, not to you know, let you know what's happened while you were gone here, but Barry Lewis, our dear friend from the who is the executive editor of the Times Herald Record, is now coming every other week and bringing really, really good baked goods.
You know what this is? This is Jewish crack.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
We call that Jewish soul food.
Right. It's rugelach.
Ooh.
And it's
but my
Danish,
God,
but
is it good.
Yes, it is.
It's still,
yes,
under it the is. Studio lights. It's just glistening
yeah,
with
well,
butter.
That's what happens.
And
yeah,
icing.
Somebody
right.
Take it out of here.
Said,
yeah.
No.
Smells
no,
good.
It,
I'll just
oh
do it
God.
By smell.
It's the best air freshener in the world.
You know, if they can put that on your
yes.
car, so when you come into your
right.
car,
oh, that'd
wouldn't
be great.
If Glade could figure that out,
that
oh, it smells like Bubby's house.
That's right. There would be nothing wrong
What's
with
that one.
I assume cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
Yeah, this
the
is cinnamon
and chocolate rugelach.
Yeah, there you go.
Cinnamon is for you because you are so sweet, Alan.
That's funny.
The pause was definite.
Yes, right. The pregnant pause.
So we have the Lower Hudson Valley contingent with us this morning. And first up is Barry Lewis. Barry, good morning. Thank you very much for the big
good morning,
goods.
Thank
you for your presence. Thank you for making the schlep, and we appreciate you being here.
Boo!
Oh, you.
And thank you for the rugelach.
Yeah, we are very happy. Also, our newbie here, who's been with us the last couple of weeks, and we're thrilled. He is a former New York State Senator and SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor Terry Gibson, also hailing from the Hudson Valley and making a good trip up here, and we thank you for doing that as well.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry that I did not bring any baked goods.
Well,
next time.
Just remember.
Just learn, grasshopper.
Yes, learn. And Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you? Who is not partaking in the rugelach?
No, Roselle, I'm not. No. So actually, it was quite a day yesterday in Great Barrington. It was a real happening because Elizabeth Warren showed up, and thousands of people turned out. I never saw anything like it.
Town meeting.
Right.
They filled up.
Oh, it was a town meeting.
Well, I don't
town
know
hall,
call
whatever
it,
they
yeah.
call
it. That's where she was going.
What do you think, Alan? Is she?
Is she going to run?
Yeah.
Yes. Do I think that she wins a primary? I don't know. The big talk yesterday that everybody was talking about is, who do you think? Do you think she can do it? Will she do it? She's a very attractive candidate for so many reasons. But the alternative that I heard from so many people's mouths was Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden. Everywhere I went, people were talking about Joe Biden.
But is there a romanticism with Biden that seems good at first, and then as, I don't know, some level of reality comes in, there's going to be that, is this really the moving forward person that the Democrats want and need?
Well, you know, the New York Times has just done a huge story on this, which is,
right.
is there a revolution from the left in the Democratic Party? I think that as our very good friend Terry said earlier today in the green room, which ain't green, you know, he made the point that, you know, that it's the independent voters. It's the guys in the middle. They love Biden. And therefore, if they want to win, the question is, do you want to win or do you want to be right? That's the question.
But, you know, I mean, the other thing, too, though— Yes, I mean it could be a nostalgia and a feeling
back
about
to that
uncle,
Obama,
Uncle Joe.
Right, that Obama era.
But to look further into it, he is really the only Democrat who is out there calling Trump out and saying he's unfit to be president. He is. This is one of our darkest moments in our history. Grotesque lies, lies about immigrants, lies about crime, lies about cost to the community. They are simply lies, factually inaccurate. I mean, he is going for the jugular, which no one else is.
And he's got the gravitas, and he's, you know, there's so many things that he has going for him. The question's going to be, and it's probably the biggest question deep in his soul, which was the last time, does he want it?
Yeah, does he want it?
Does he really want it? Because he knows that.
I think he does want it, and I think that we have to remember what his roots are. He's a white, working-class guy from Scranton, Pennsylvania. He can bring those people back into the party who feel like they've been left behind because he can talk to them. He knows what their struggles are. I mean, not that he lives those struggles today. Let's be real. We know that that's not the case.
But he has struggled, Libby.
But he has.
Bo, the death
he
of
has
Bo and
so,
all.
I mean, he lost his wife and kids in a car accident. He lost Bo. You know, he grew up as hard scrabble. He gets what it means to be working class and to grow up in the industrial Northeast where it's dying. You know, and I think he can bring the folks that left and went to Trump because they thought they were going to get something good and something new back.
It would be interesting if they have a primary with him, Warren, Cuomo, I assume to a degree, maybe in that. I mean, it's going to be an interesting mix. Yeah. And folks who, you know, Cory Booker. I mean, there were certain people that I don't think were even, just like Obama, wasn't on anyone's real radar.
Yeah, because once we get past the midterms, there is this whole group of people on the left that, as you said, are in the midst of a revolution right now. And let's see what difference they're able to make in the voting in upcoming midterms. But then will they be able to be attracted by a Joe Biden or more of like a Cory Booker type? I think that's the big question.
It was interesting, Terry. Yesterday, when I went down to see the happening, and it was real interesting, and I saw my friend Richie Neal, who I just am so enamored of. I think the guy is wonderful. He's maybe the best congressman around. And he introduced Warren and all. But I have to say, it is really not the people who are online, the committed people, there was a lot of gray in the line. A lot of gray. So then I went around the corner and had another illegal substance, a tiny little cup of vanilla ice cream.
Marijuana will soon be legal.
So
you can buy it.
So I went around the corner.
It was in a hemp cup.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Lined in hemp. No wonder you were sort of floating.
A hemp comb.
And the people, and the people in that room were the millennials and their kids. They were not online. They were not among the 2,000 people who had lined up to see, you know, Elizabeth Warren. So those are the people you have to keep your eye on when these decisions are being made.
So, Al, do you think then this, the Me Too and the gun and the violence and all the stuff that we think will trigger millennials to come out and vote, do you think that's by the time November comes around, it will have all been gone?
Here's my problem. 50% of the people in this country don't vote for president. 50%. And more there in that group, there are more Democrats than there are Republicans. No two ways about it. The very people who need the health care, who need the services, who need the SNAP, you know, all that stuff, they're not there. And how you get those people out, Terry, you of all people know this better than anybody.
Well, it's tough, and I would just say that anybody that's listening that is unhappy with the state of affairs that we're in right now, get involved in your local elections. Find out who's running in your state elections, find out who's running in your congressional elections, and show up at their office and volunteer, because right now it's all about what happens in 2018, and once we get through that, we can start talking about 2020.
You are so right.
That's right.
And the 2018 thing is really at the top of the list, because if the House doesn't flip—
doesn't matter.
You know, you have no more protection than you have now. So I've been talking to people. Look, I've known John Faso for a long time. But in the end, the question is that a seat? That could be the seat which makes the difference in the composition of the United States Congress.
I think it's going to be an interesting race, that particular race. But I think throughout New York State, obviously throughout the country, there's going to be lots of pivotal races. And it's really going to be up to the people. The people have to realize that we have a democracy that we can use to defend our democracy. And that's called voting and getting involved in elections. And if they do that, then I think we'll see dramatic change. And if they don't, then we get what we get, and that's unfortunate.
We get what we get. I like it. But the other side of that is the political scientist in me knows that people in the European democracies, the parliamentary democracies, they vote based often on the party and not the candidate, right? We know it. They want the socialists, so they want the this, that. We don't vote that way in this country. Yeah. And I meet people who genuinely like John Faso.
But I think this year Trump has, I think, and depending on where you live, has changed that. And where I agree there were people and where our coverage areas, you know, folks like Bill Larkin and John Bonasek and others, Democrat, Republican, they felt as though they knew these representatives. They liked them. They may not agree entirely, but they felt as though he brought stuff back to the district, was always there for them.
Right.
And I agree. They voted. Some people probably couldn't even tell you if he was Republican or Democrat. I think this year could be, and I think that's where I suppose maybe Democrats are hoping for.
But you know, Barry, the political scientists are always talking about, and we all taught it in American Government 101. The pardon me, I'm choking on a Ruggler.
That's what you get.
No, but we all talk about this thing called a realigning election. This is, you know, you see them every once in a while when people, it just becomes so overwhelming that unexpectedly something can happen. I mean, we're now concentrating so many people in terms of watching the House. But the Senate, you never know. You just don't know how angry people are.
I mean, we saw it in 2010. You know, Obama, that press conference the next morning, you know, he sheepishly looked into the cameras and it was like almost a mea culpa moment where he said, yeah, okay, America, I was wrong. America's mad. And, you know, it had hit him at that point in time how America felt as he saw, you know, the whatever majority or he had was gone completely.
Well, but down in your area where you are the important editor of the paper down there, the question is, I can understand how people are doing in Great Barrington. You know, that's pretty predictable. What's happening down there in the lower Hudson Valley?
Obviously, the unemployment rate is going down. Some people are getting a boost economically. But I think others, you know, jobs are coming back. Construction is better. There are some major projects going on in all three of our areas. But I think folks are concerned. You know, those, they love the tax cut, but then when you look into paycheck, you realize that wasn't that big a deal. And I think there's concern over health care, which is real.
But putting it on the table.
Yeah. Is it enough for them to...
There's a certain amount of racism, xenophobia, that pervades some of our population. I don't see that in Great Barrington. The question is, do you see it down there?
It's interesting because we were talking. This is an unusual year in my area because we have... there's been such a shift because of several long-term representatives, Bill Locke and John Bonasek, who are retiring. We have now Sean Patrick Maloney conceivably looking to give up his seat as he runs for attorney general.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah, you've got James Skoufis, who's looking to give up his seat to run against for John Bonasek's seat. So for the first time...
No, for Larkin's seat.
For Larkin's seat, excuse me. So for the first time in a while, you've got this major shift of people and how that plays with this whole possible wave of blue is going to be interesting. I think to a man, people are like, okay, you know, life is okay. But I think this shift is going to... it's going to be interesting. That's going to sway folks.
But I'm sorry.
No, please. Well, I was just going to say that what is different, I think, is that Trump's election has activated, along with the help of a lot of groups that have come up as a result of that, has activated a whole group of people that were not previously involved in elections. And many of those people are people of color, people from the low-income spectrum, people that have just really not been involved in government and have realized that they do have a voice and that voting is a way to do it. it. And, of course, what we're all waiting to see is if they actually do show up and vote.
How immigration is going to play. If you're some of the, you know, a black dirt farmers in Southern mm-hmm. Orange County, and suddenly it's difficult now to get the workers to come out there, or the construction crews who are finding it difficult to get help and workers, the daily workers.
Right.
You know, if all that plays into it, and folks who have dealt with Latinos and Mexicans, and suddenly finding that their good friends are no longer around because there's fear. Even if you're a conservative, that plays into it. Thinking, wait a minute, I knew this guy with me. He's great. I know his family, and suddenly now he's worried about being deported and he's left. Mm. You know, I don't know how. That does play into the psyche of some folks, even if they're conservative.
We're going to take a break there. When we come back, we'll talk about this and many more subjects. We'll find out what the president's been tweeting and talk about that. And
do we have to?
Yeah, we do. We'll we'll take a pastry break and we'll be back.
Stop.
Alan Shartok, Terry Gibson, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. And as I mentioned earlier, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Keep them short, keep them to the point, one per customer. Simple as that, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have Libby Post, Barry Lewis, Terry Gibson, and Alan Shartok has a fistful of letters, not dollars, letters.
I do. Hey, before we do, Barry, I saw an editorial in your paper this weekend in which you went after Sean Patrick Maloney, who we often interview on WAMC, in which you
we took him to task.
You created another
tell, Barry.
Yeah, so I appreciate you reading that, Alan. Basically, the idea is, can or should Sean Patrick Maloney be, at this point, currently running for two offices? He's running to be the Attorney General for the state of New York. At the same time, he's looking to remain as a House of
Congressman
in the House of Representatives. He believes that he can do both, since the primaries are not on the same day, and that money that possibly goes to one account can be shuffled over to another. And the question is, right now legally there's he's finding opposition on the left of a fellow Democrat, and there may be some Republicans who are also upset by this. And our stance is, you know, there's a question of if he legally can do it and if he should do this.
Well, it's interesting. It's a competitive district.
Very.
So, mm-hmm. So then you say, okay, let's assume, and people don't like it, right? So let's assume for a second that he loses in the AG race, which he may win, by the way. But let's say he loses in that primary and he goes back and says, okay, now elect me as your congressman. There may be some angry people.
Well, that's the thing. He's putting out flyers and he's sending out releases for his run for AG. And he says, this is the most important seat. This is the seat that can, you know, where we can really investigate Donald Trump. This is the most important seat. This is what I really want.
Well, he's got a point.
And then if he loses that, he pivots and says, well, vote for me for Congress, because in Congress, this is where we can get the Trump, and this is the most important seat, and this is what I want. And you're thinking, well, gee, 24 hours ago, before you lost the election, that was the most important seat.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Lyndon Johnson did it. He ran for both president and the United States Senate at the same time. I'll never forget it. There was a big to-do kerfuffle
about
it.
Didn't Lieberman did it too, right?
Who?
Lieberman. Ran for vice president.
Yes. Interesting. Yes. Yeah. Interesting.
That
interesting.
I also just want to mention that... Yeah, please. A lot of people, I would say most people, are not paying attention to this. They are hearing the name Maloney over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And whether it's for AG or for the congressional race, they're not making that distinction. And I think they're not wrapped up in it as much as we are. And I don't
think what are you concluding?
I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference for him either way. I think probably it's a benefit in terms of just getting his name mentioned over and over again, because you're talking about election law policy, which is probably one of the most boring things you could possibly be talking about.
True.
And I just don't think the average voter is paying attention to this.
I don't think if he loses the AG primary, that is going to affect Democrats who are going to say. So he's in a safe position. But that doesn't make it a right position. See, and I think it's the responsibility of us and others to call him out on that.
Of a great metropolitan newspaper to call him out.
Yeah.
As I said in Superman, you know, great metropolitan newspaper. But I do think that the people who are in that congressional district, look, it's a competitive, very competitive district, and you don't need to lose that many.
And if he wins the AG primary, then it's his, it's the it's committee within
right.
his district.
They'll lose the seat.
Right. And so they've
they could lose.
Already
that seat's gone back and forth and back.
Yeah, and they've already selected somebody, but that somebody who obviously cannot do anything until after the primary will have, I think it's 6 weeks mm-hmm. then to start raising money, start having his name out there, while Sean Patrick's Republican challenger, Jimmy O'Donnell, has been out there and, you know, is getting the votes. And certainly makes it a much, much closer seat. And I think that's what has annoyed a lot of Democrats in Congress, because this was pretty much a safe seat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And suddenly it could be up for grabs
sure.
when it would appear as though any Democrat who won the AG seat was going to get it regardless. So suddenly now he's put a lot of stuff into play.
Terry?
Well, there are going to be lots of other names on the AG line besides Sean Patrick Maloney. And I think what's really important is that we focus on what is it that we need in an AG in New York State. It's
absolutely
an incredibly
right.
important position. And I think for the voters to have choices is a good thing. And I think it's important that every voter take time and look at all the different candidates. We need someone that will hold not only Donald Trump accountable, we need someone that will hold Andrew Cuomo accountable, we need someone that will hold the entire Albany legislature accountable.
Gee, we had somebody like that.
But you make a very good
and
point.
And who's going to do that?
That's
who's
right.
going to do that?
Is it going to be the endorsed candidate of Andrew Cuomo who is going to be calling Cuomo, if it need be, before the bar of justice?
Well, I would question whether that's going to happen or not. But I do think that voters need to look and see if they want someone who is truly independent, like, say, a Zephyr Teachout, or if they want someone who's closer to the governor, like, say, a Sean Patrick Maloney.
Tish James.
Tish James.
Yeah.
She's the
preferred one. Yeah. Yeah.
What are you, Terry, what are you running for next?
I'm not running for anything right now.
I'm running
to be on the round table.
Oh, a non-denial.
Would you just promise me this? Everyone says they will, and then they screw us. If you're going to make an announcement, do it here.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, turn to the man on your right and have it in their Time Zone record.
Only if baked goods are here and I can all right.
Get those things out of here. Sarah LaDuke, come in here and grab them. Thank you. Susan says, progressive message. While you're on this tack, Democrats continue to lack a clear and compelling message platform that will appeal to more voters of both parties. What do you all think the message should be? The issues. I really want to work with our Democratic National Committee on this.
Anybody?
I don't agree with the premise of the letter, and I know I will be severely criticized for it. I think you need somebody who can talk about the issues. Elizabeth Warren did a terrific job of it yesterday. But in the end, it's got to be somebody with passion. It's got to be somebody who can really sell the potatoes and excite people the way that the other guy has done on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what Donald did. That's what Bernie right. was doing. There was a passion. There was a clear message, and there was a passion.
Right.
And that's why I'm saying with Joe Biden, I think if Joe wants it, if he suddenly feels it again.
Yeah.
I think he can do that. You know, there's no question he can. When Joe Biden gets the passion, he's amazing.
But I think he can also
mess up.
Go well, yes. But if it's Trump Biden,
yes.
Right. I think Joe Biden can go head to head with Trump.
I agree.
In
you.
A way that no one else can.
You don't think Elizabeth Warren could?
No, I think he will demean her just like he demeans all women.
That's a given.
But you know, he has a very hard time standing up to stronger men. He has no problem undermining women and going after women and being a sexist. Right, yeah. Trump. And so if you have another guy who's stronger, smarter, taller,
nicer,
people love more. I think he'll. I think you'll. It'll be. It'll be the Putin kind of relationship.
No, you're
where
right,
he just
Libby.
Folds.
He is a beloved figure in this.
The only thing Biden could have as a danger is that for those who felt as though Obama did not connect and any issues and any problems, he's going to be the reminder of that. Now, right now, we're thinking, gee, the romanticism, and there was some practicality where Obama was great, but suddenly the flaws are forgotten.
Remember that had Obama been allowed to run another time, he would have won overwhelmingly.
That's right. He's the most admired president ever.
Yeah, I don't. I think if Biden's the candidate, the real question is, as the Times points out in a very interesting series of articles, is the Democratic Party in revolution? Sir, do you want to take this with you while you're on it? No. Oh, okay. Thank you.
I think we have a long way to go before we get to who's going to be president. But I think that right now, Joe Biden does serve a purpose in that he is a great validator for the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. He does have the name recognition and the respect, and we need that right now.
Does it say something, Terry, about the Democrats? And again, it's not as if Joe is bad, but if it's Joe Biden, what does that say also about, you know, is he the Walter Mondale? Is he the guy who, you know, seemed to have just been the heir apparent regardless?
The Democratic Party is in a major transition right now, just as I think probably the Republican Party is. And, you know, I don't know if after the midterms we're going to have the same kind of Democratic Party we have now. We may be looking at diverging into a whole different type of a party or a new party. But whether Joe Biden can be the person leads that through or not, I'm not convinced, but we'll see.
So that's interesting because Eliza agrees with you, not Biden. It's not a matter of finding a centrist versus someone on the left. The Dems need to find someone who is not part of the political class. The people are desperately seeking a change from the political corruption. That's why they elected Obama, an outsider, and why they took a chance on Trump. The average voter has, in capital letters, no interest in voting for Biden. Just look at Ocasio-Cortez. Now, I want to look at Ocasio-Cortez because I find that to be a very interesting phenomenon. All of a sudden, people are saying, well, you know, she's an announced Democratic socialist, and therefore that's why she won. Wrong! She won because more people in that district looked like her, sounded like her, and that's why she won. It really was a matter of demographics, and she knew it, and she did it, and she worked very, very hard.
She had a ground game, and he didn't.
Yeah,
he took it for granted. Just like Stanley Steingart did in 1978.
Only you and I remember him.
Only, you know, just like he took it all for granted. He was the Speaker of the Assembly. Helene Weinstein ran against him. She outran him.
And she's still there.
And she's still there, and he's in the dustbin of obscurity. But he was a very powerful guy who lost in a Democratic primary.
Boy, was he powerful.
Right, and he took it for granted, and so did Joe Crowley. And that's what happens. You can't
out— And who was the Republican who did the same thing that got ousted, you know, that nobody expected to. He was a Republican congressman. Come on. Oh, boy.
Where was he from?
I don't know where he's from.
Oh, okay.
I do think we have to give Ocasio-Cortez her due. She did have a great ground game.
She did?
She was very organized. There was a grassroots movement there that I do think had a huge impact on the turnout for that vote. There may be a lot of people there that look like her, but until somebody went to them and said, I need your help, I need you to vote for me, they weren't showing up.
You couldn't be right.
And I think that's what's happening across the country right now. Is
and that,
these
by
groups
the way,
are organizing.
I'm sorry, Terry, but that is why, one of the reasons why Obama won, because, you know, a sizable black vote turned out to vote for him. It's one of the reasons, although I'm told never to say this out loud, it's one of the reasons why I think our Deval Patrick from Massachusetts would be an ideal candidate for president of the United States, or at least for vice president, because it would help with the turnout.
And you just said it out loud.
Okay, I did.
We have to go to a break. Were you going to say something else?
I was, but it's okay. Can wait.
Okay, thank God. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 11 minutes before the top of the hour. We go back to letters and then we'll move on to other stuff.
Okay, Joe, thank you. And Jim in Montgomery says, while Alan is right, the Faso seat might be the one that decides the House. It is unfortunate that Sean Patrick Maloney has now put his seat in doubt. We've talked about this right here just now. as well by running for Attorney General of New York. If he wins the primary for AG, there is no one of consequence in the wings to take his spot on the ballot. May I just interject? There's always somebody else. I mean, you know, you can't say there's no one. Because
there is somebody, but there's no question that person does not have the money or the gravitas of
Let's remember that Obama was nobody, you know, also, leaving it vulnerable to be won by a token Republican candidate who is wholly unqualified. If he loses the AG primary, the Democratic voters might just be soured enough to stay home and jeopardize his seat as well as others. Not good, in capital letters, Jim in Montgomery.
Not good.
Not good. Paul says, Ms. Libby, former Senator Joseph Biden is a known serial toucher of women. Just go to C-SPAN. Watch how uncomfortable Mrs. Ash Carter is when Toucher Joe tries to give her an unprovoked back rub. Ms. Libby, are you condoning then-Senator Biden's treatment of Anita Hill? Senator Biden ripped off the American taxpayer, rode Amtrak for free, and is probably still doing it. Ms. Libby?
First of all, he apologized about Anita Hill. That's number one. Yeah. He apologized right off the bat, and you know. And number two, I know that Joe is a little touchy feely, and I get it. And I'm not an apologist for that at all. But as we look to the future, and if we want to get rid of Trump in 2020, if Joe Biden is the nominee, we all just need to hold our nose if we don't like this man and vote for him so that we don't have another 4 years of Trump. We have to look beyond our own personal political animus on an individual basis and start thinking about what's good for the country and what's good for the long term. And the only thing that matters from my perspective is getting rid of Trump.
And by the way, I couldn't agree with you more about all of that. But mostly, I think we're in a spot now where we have to apply that very important wisdom to congressional races also.
We have to do it for
every race. You might like your own
race.
Guy, but if the House doesn't, there'll be no impeachment, there'll be
That's right.
Libby, can I ask you, I agree with you, but it's ironic because I think that's exactly what the Republican and Trump supporters are saying, which is exactly what you said. We're holding our noses. We're not crazy about the guy. There's a lot of stuff, and we're looking at the long term.
The difference is that the Republicans, not the rank and file, but the Congress, the senators, all those folks, they're raking in big bucks. They're making a tremendous amount of money off of this man, and they're getting every policy initiative they want. They're going to gut the Endangered Species Act. They're going to get rid of Roe v. Wade. They're going to try to overturn same-sex marriage. The tax code, which is going to screw the people who needed the most help. The Supreme Court. I mean, you know, healthcare, all of this stuff that's important for working people is going to go by because we're letting the oligarchs of this country get away with murder.
And this is interesting, too, because we're always hearing, I think we even had a letter just recently about how the Democrats continue to not be able to come up with a message that resonates with their base, when the message really ought to be, we are the party that is not Trump. We are the party that
can replace
Trump. What other message do you need beyond that?
Right.
It's always astounding. We had a green room debate before we even came in here about how important health care.
We call it rehearsal.
Yeah. How important health care is to rank and file. Well, it should be. I just don't know that it is. I just don't see any.
And it's not
great
until
evidence.
That happens to you, until you suddenly find yourself where you have a precondition and you realize that 6 months ago you could have gotten it and now you can't.
Yeah.
I think when it happens in your home, you're going to like, whoa.
Right. And nobody pays attention to anything until it happens to them. It's just that simple.
And Craig says, Biden, please, no. His faults outweigh his public politic in relation to being a viable candidate. He better serves the issues by playing supporting role. He is not working class, an older white male, wealthy and well-established in the political paycheck. He would be merely more of the same. And that's from Craig in Burlington Falls, New York. All right, and we'll continue with these letters. Dan says, Trump tweets, good morning, panel. Hey, Dan, just a little shorter on this, these letters. Good morning, panel. Unfortunately, I think I already know the answer to my question. I'll post it anyway. In response to, I believe, Libby's comment before the break as to whether or not we really had to talk about Trump's tweets, my comment is, no, you don't. Why is it that every one of you, and many on NPR and elsewhere in the journalism profession, know that his tactic of tweeting outlandish things is purely to distract you all and get you talking about something else? There's no substance behind it, yet you do it every single time anyway? Question mark. I know Alan's going to say he's the president, you have to cover what he says, but I say he's just playing his game and letting him dictate the rules. Thanks, Dan. I'll take up the cudgels. Here's the deal. This morning, he's after Iran.
Right.
Right.
He's capital letters.
Never, ever threaten the United States again or you will face severe consequences. To me, that is news when the President of the United States says that
to another country. You can't ignore that in capital letters.
Well, how can you not ignore it?
Exactly.
It means a war.
Yeah.
This guy is going to take us to war to take people's minds off of Mueller.
I think the bigger mistake that, and certainly the media was responsible for, was giving him the prime time spots when he was the candidate, when he was holding all his. There's where I think the networks were all complicit. We were all complicit. He's the president now. When he tweets that stuff about another country, and you wake up on a Monday, you're wondering, am I going to be able? Should I buy green bananas or not?
Right. Right. It's true because will we be here long enough for them to get ripe? That's absolutely right.
It's always, all about the green bananas.
Always buy the Ruggeloch berry. Always buy that.
Because that doesn't have a long shelf life. You're
no,
okay.
No, it really doesn't.
So are we officially talking about the tweet now?
We can. Go ahead.
I just want to, what strikes me about this tweet is that he has literally, like he does so often, left himself no place to go. Once you make this kind of threat, once you make this kind of implication, once you send it out in all caps, where can you go beyond that? And I think it'll be very interesting to
but
see.
But this is what he does.
It
He'll
is.
Do
I
this.
Mean, he did this with Kim Jong-un, yeah. And then yes. And then several months later, yeah, they're right. Meeting each other.
And this morning, he's saying, I'm very disturbed about the lack of progress.
And if they don't do anything, he can then say, you see, I was the big guy. They didn't do anything. And so, thank you I'll take all the credit.
And Sal says, panel, the only way Trump will be out of the White House is to vote for his opponent in 2020. Forget impeachment. Instead, propose constructive legislation for Congress to consider. Yeah, right. This Congress? Stop waiting for Trump to self-destruct. Yeah, I think he is self-destructing right now, right before our very eyes. The anti-Trump kvetching goes nowhere. And Dems need to get off the identity politics versus straight white people. And Keith says, one, you give Trump too much respect to make sense of his tweets and other utterances. He's a liar. That is a fundamental fact about him. Oh, and I guess you haven't heard that here, huh? Two, the American people often seem to vote irrationally, such as Christian conservatives, who will ignore the Ten Commandments and all of the teachings of Jesus to support guns and oppose abortion and gay rights. Three, anything irrational in American politics can be explained by race. Race is the single fact at the bottom of all American madness and dysfunction, and that's from Keith.
Keith is absolutely right, and it was what I was going to say before when you, Barry, was talking about 2010, with the midterms, it was all about race. All about race.
And when did the Civil War end?
Right. It hasn't, really.
That's right.
It's still about race. So much of what's going on right now
is about race. It's constantly about race.
And our friend Daisy, who quite frequently writes, Biden says, Anita Hill, there are so many women who feel like being one of them, that Biden threw Hill and other women under the bus, and it would be a slap in the face of women to nominate him. He has never apologized to her.
He apologized publicly about this situation.
He just makes excuses. No Joe Biden. Someone else will emerge. Daisy. I've already said what I have to say. Nicholas says, Biden, I was staunchly behind Hillary. The Democrats and independents just sat out the last election. Will not vote Biden. They want change. We need someone new that the anti-gun kids, the millennials, and the people of color will support. Nicholas from Tilson. And Linda says, you have to be kidding. We need a younger person, preferably a woman, and maybe a person of color. This is from the point of view of a senior citizen. Linda.
Oh, Kamala Harris sort of fits that bill.
And Adam says, I'm so disappointed not to hear Kamala Harris spoken about in as a serious candidate.
There we go.
I think trying to draw Trump's racist base over the line is the way to lose. She will talk circles around this buffoon and will really galvanize the left. And, whoops, Thank you. Thank you, Terry. My back won't permit it. Deborah Crowley Race, dear panel, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez won in white areas by an even greater margin. Ground game organizing. Crowley, like his cousin who lost her council city,
It's probably city. Seat.
Probably meant seat. Took people for granted. Okay.
One more and we got to take a break.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Joe and Nancy said, good morning. If you look at the breakdown, Alexandria Cortez actually did better with young white voters in Queens than older Latino voters in the Bronx.
All right, we're going to hold there. We will come back and do much, much more. Don't hurt the arugula. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Let me reintroduce the group. Political consultant Libby Post is here. Barry Lewis is with us, and we're thrilled to have him. He is the executive editor of the Times Herald Record. Terry Gibson also joins us as a former New York State senator and SUNY New Paltz communications professor. Alan Chartok has a lot of letters in his hands, and he's going to start reading a few of them.
Okay. And Lila, says, I respect Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren, but it's time for a fresh new face in the race. Landrieu from New Orleans. Well, you know, she makes a very good point. He's a wonderful man, and he has something that so many of them don't have, guts.
But
the
not
guy
only
has
that,
guts.
He can bring parts of the South with him.
Yeah.
He can bring out the black vote in the South. He can bring out the whatever Democratic base there is in the South. He stood up and got rid of the Confederate statues
which take them down.
Play really well up in the North and the progressives. He could be the sleeper.
Gonna be the best part of primaries. Yeah. The primary is gonna force Democrats to really be out there, bubble to the top. And I think it's going to be a very healthy thing for Democrats. Yeah.
Well, I think Landrieu could be a catalyst, but I think perhaps maybe a better vice presidential candidate than presidential. Who knows? Roseanne says Harris Kennedy three team. I think Joe Kennedy third has potential. How about a team in 2020? Kamala Harris and Joe Kennedy. After that term, he'll be over 47, ready for president. Just like his grandpa.
His great uncle.
Teresa says, Senator Chris Murphy for president. Every time I see or hear Senator Chris Murphy, I want him to run in 2020. Not a bad idea. He's terrific.
Boy, he's around.
He would have more power in Congress.
Well, you say that, but not more than if he were president, right?
If he runs on the right year, he could, and lose, he could stay in the Senate. Right, right.
He gets what we call a free ride.
Yeah.
Lisa, candidates, please, no more old white men for president. No, just no. And that's from Lisa.
Okay.
And John Kasich. What if the yesterday? Unfortunately,
he's gonna primary.
Unfortunately, I got into a little bit of trouble yesterday. I shouldn't probably talk about it, but I will anyway. Some guy stands up. He couldn't get into the theater yesterday,
for Elizabeth Warren.
So he had to be with the rest of the people, you know, outside listening to the thing. So he comes up and he yells, she's not getting my vote. They didn't let me in. So I get in the guy's face a little bit. I shouldn't have done it. I know that now. And I say, so who are you going to vote for? Not her. I'm not voting for her. And then he makes a big mistake. He puts his hand on my arm. You don't do that with the Chartok twins. You just don't.
No.
I mean, it's a West Side thing. You don't do it. You know. It's a,
so what'd you do? Did you take him down?
Oh, I was gonna.
Yeah.
I said,
but your back was hurting.
Yeah, take your hand off. hold me. hold me back.
Right, I would, but I'd throw my back out, and then I wouldn't be able to walk tomorrow.
hold me back.
Because I'm really an old Delta Caucus. Go ahead.
Well. As the old line goes from the 2,000-year-old man, you found me out.
Yeah.
Okay, so John Kasich. Okay, what if the only adult in the 2016 Republican primary debates were to run as an independent in 2020? Mike from Munson, Mass.
He would lose by a mile.
Mm. Yeah.
Independents in that
way. As most independents do, yes.
Alex says, Delgado. I was dismayed by the Dems' choice of Delgado, given the undercurrents of racism in our district and the need to defeat Faso. Now the rap albums are coming out in commercials. Will be an uphill battle. I plan to canvass in the inner city areas of Kingston, Newburgh, Poughkeepsie, et cetera, to help get out the people who look like Delgado and who will like the rap. How does the fellow from down the valley feel about the chance, about his chances? Are there large populations of blacks and Hispanics in the Hudson Valley cities?
I think that Delgado has a chance, less having to do with that and more for, I believe, that Democrats are, or
if there's a wave. If there's a wave.
Yeah, if there's a wave. And I also think folks are looking not for anybody but Faso. I think this is the anybody but Faso year.
Yeah.
Terry?
I was just going to, and also I think you have to remember that there was a very fair, lengthy, debated primary where many, many choices were put before the voters. This is who the Democrats chose.
And,
they are solidly behind him. And I think you have to understand that this is the party's pick. The party now has responsibility to get them elected.
Are the other candidates standing behind him? The other congressional?
I don't know a lot about that.
So why do you ask the question, Libby?
Well, because, you know, if you have these people with their bases, and if Jeff Beals or, you know, Brian Flynn or Pat Ryan, they all say, yes, we support Delgado, that just helps Delgado.
Well, let me put it this
way,
Libby, they damn well better.
Yeah, well,
because if
that,
they ever, if Delgado loses and they ever want to win, this will be remembered.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the way that we beat Donald Trump. This is the way that we take back control of our government. And
it's
starts in our own districts. And it starts in the House, and it starts in John Faso's district. Yeah. And if you want to change it, you better get out there and help
and
this young
starts,
man get elected.
It starts on the local level
as
well.
And this is a talented young man. This is a man that has a family, that has
Rhodes Scholar,
that has incredibly talented in a multiple variety of ways. And he will make an excellent representative for us.
And, you know, the gentleman who said he was canvassing, he shouldn't be canvassing simply to get into the inner city because of the rap music. He should be doing it just because that's what you do.
I see you dropped your G there. Kay says, getting out the vote. In my little local area, the percentage of Democrats voting in midterm elections rose from 30% to 74% when we went out in the community to talk to registered voters. Want to make a difference? Talk to your neighbors. And Ramon says, the comment about needing illegal immigrants for construction exposes the elitism of the panel. Those have long been family-sustaining jobs for local citizens. They can be heard. A panelist lament the lack of illegal immigrants to fill the need of labor and lower the wages of fellow Americans that rely on that industry to support their family. More evidence of elitists that are disconnected from their own community. Another example of no connection to the realities of their fellow Americans.
That's if this gentleman drove around, he would see reality. That is the reality.
I'm sorry.
The reality of legal and illegal immigrants working in this country, the need for them, not taking away people's jobs, but working with others to do the jobs that others do not want.
What about all the produce that is going to rot in the fields because we don't have enough people to go out there and do that work?
Yeah, well, okay, you write them, we read them. Lisa says, Democrats, I beg the Democrats to not go down the socialist road. I, for one, don't ever foresee guaranteed wages or free college. I'm afraid between Bernie and Alexandria, that's where they're heading. It will be a mistake. I think we need to get down in the mud with Trump and fight on his terms. Lisa from Pequog. I want you to know I went to a free college. I went to Hunter College in the Bronx when it was free. And I must say my parents didn't have a lot. They had two twins to send out to college and state universities and things, and they got by. And I could look around me at Hunter and I tell you a lot of people who would not ever have been in our society had that not been free. And one of the worst things that ever happened was attaching costs to the City University of New York, because if you send people under the name of equality of opportunity to high school and to middle school and to elementary school, why in the world would you not continue that and send them for a college education? I think I have to disagree with you.
I also want to say that I do understand where the writer is coming from there, but a lot of this is just natural evolution. Young people are finding themselves in a tough spot. They can't afford college. They can't afford
$70,000 a year for a private college.
They are having a hard time finding good jobs. They can't afford decent housing. This socialist revolution is just a natural evolution that you really can't fight. You really can't change it. It would be a mistake, I think, for the Democrats to try to ignore that. They have to embrace it somehow and make it a part of the message.
Okay. And moving right along, comment. Obama was in his 40s when he was elected president. Bill Clinton was in his 40s. Carter was in his 40s. And going back further, JFK was in his 40s. Democrats need to remember history when they nominate the next candidate for president, Tom. And then Janos in Great Barrington says, Shark Talk is right. Both candidates you mentioned are tarnished and have no chance to become president. Bernie, if he runs again, has a much greater chance because he does not represent the establishment, and people know this. Warren and Biden represent the old establishment. If Warren even wants a remote chance, she should take the DNA test, or the issue of her background will be raised, and Trump will eat her alive. Best in that, Janos from Great Barrington. I cannot take credit for having said that I was against both of them. Right now, I would vote for Joe Biden in a heartbeat. I just have to say that, set the record straight. Peter says sources of political funds contributions no longer have to be reported. Last week, the Secretary of the Treasury informed the IRS that sources of political funds contributions no longer have to be reported. In other words, Russia can now donate $400 million to the NRA political campaign fund account without a traceable report. No coverage of this. What is wrong with this? Is only Stormy D worth reporting on? Well, Peter, as usual, great respect for you for sending this letter, but I want to point out you had to find out about this somewhere. And it has been in the papers, and it's been in the papers constantly. So it isn't a question of there's no report about this anywhere. Thank you, though, Peter. And then Jerome says, Biden, I respect him, and he's a better man than I, but he's old and white and lacks Bernie's appeal. And Bernie is not old and white.
That'll be news
and
to
by
Bernie.
By the way, I was a Bernie supporter, as you all know, and I voted for him, which I said at the time. But he is old and white.
All right, let's move on to other stuff, if we can. I would appreciate that. Let's go to, we've got about 8 minutes and 8 topics. So there we go. Let's talk about Carter Page for a second. The FISA documents are being released by the Justice Department, which the president says is full exoneration.
Joe, if you would, you need to give us a sentence because I've been talking to people all day since
I'm ready to do it.
Who have no idea who Carter Page is and what this is all about.
The Trump administration disclosed on Saturday a previously top secret set of documents related to the wiretapping of Carter Page, the one-time Trump campaign advisor who was at the center of highly contentious accusations by Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee that the FBI had abused its surveillance powers. You will remember in February, Democrats rejected the Republican claims that law enforcement officials had improperly obtained a warrant to monitor Mr. Page, accusing them of putting out misinformation to defend President Trump, and so doubts about the origin of the Russia investigation. One other thing to note here is the vindication angle, and that is what the president was tweeting about yesterday. He claimed without evidence that his administration's release of the documents related to the surveillance had confirmed that the Justice Department and the FBI, quote, misled the courts in the early stages of the Russia investigation.
So are you saying, is this president saying that he released these and he should get credit for it?
Yes.
That's nonsense, yes. Of course. Yes. This is freedom of information stuff. And people were after it and after it and after it. And by the way, so much of it is redacted that it's hard to make any sense out of any of it.
This is what he says. Looking more and more like the Trump campaign for president was illegally being spied upon, surveillance for the political gain of crooked Hillary Clinton and the DNC, Mr. Trump wrote on Twitter. All right.
Joe, my question is there anybody in the Trump campaign that did not have ties to Russia? Instead of looking for those who did, I'd be curious to know if there's anybody out there, including the president, who didn't have any ties. You've got Rick Gates. You've got Paul Manafort. You have Michael Flynn. You have George Papadopoulos. Now you have Carter Page. You've got the Trump sons, frickin' frat over there. Is there anybody who hadn't met with a Russian oligarch, a Russian spy, a Russian anyone?
Yet.
Well, if you go back and look at Carter Page's history, by the way, he is a local person. He is from the Hudson Valley. He's from Poughkeepsie. He used to run an international program at Bard College. So this is a local Hudson Valley person. And he has had an association with the Russians for a very, very long,
very long time.
From both an educational and a business perspective. And
has Bard spoken up on their ties to him?
Yeah. I am not aware of that.
Well, he has strayed if he was at Bard.
I'm not aware of that. But yeah, he grew up in Poughkeepsie.
Well, that,
I was waiting for Libby to chime in.
No, the thing is that, you know, you can't, nothing that this man tweets, nothing that this man says has any credibility for anybody who thinks. The problem is that the people who follow him don't think. They want to be told what to think. They want to be told what to say. You know, I saw a story the other day that said people who listen to Fox News exclusively are less informed than people who don't listen to the news at all. And that basically says it all for me.
Yeah, I took the time last night and I looked at, purposely looked at maybe 10 different stories on this story. And it was just a pattern. The conservative news covered it one way and the more liberal news covered it another.
No, not liberal. And professional.
Okay, professional.
Oh,
okay.
Come on, Libby.
Very professional.
No.
Leave the man alone.
But I mean, there's definitely two sides to it. But I also read most of the document and then looked at the reports on it. And it's very clear that the judges who approved this surveillance knew what evidence was being given to them.
Republican judges,
yeah,
by the
right.
way.
They were Republican judges. They knew that it came from this Michael Steele dossier. They knew that he was on the payroll for the Democrats. They knew what they were approving. So I think that this really does give a lot of credence to the Democrats' message in the House that all along, there has been an investigation for a very long time by our Justice Department that something is going on.
As you said, he had connections back in 2013. So there was reason for, beyond the dossier, there was reasons enough for the wiretapping and for what the judge is allowed to do because of Carter Page's connections with Russians.
Well, and let's not forget this dossier was originally commissioned by a Republican.
And why do you think this was released? Because if you look at what they're saying is that it has almost never happened that these types of documents from this court have been released to the public, almost never. So why now is this particular one being released?
And your theory is?
Well,
open the box.
I'm interested in it, but it just seems ironic that if everything going on that the Justice Department has decided to let this go, and I feel as if it's happening internally, not connected to Trump.
Well, now here's the deal: Trump is a progenitor or practitioner of the big lie. He just says it again and again and again. It could mean nothing. It could be so far from any evidence that we have. It just doesn't matter. So they put this thing out. And he says, aha, it proves I'm innocent. It proves I'm innocent. It proves I'm innocent. It proves I'm innocent. No collusion. Again and again and again.
And even what Carter Page said, I love the quotes he had here, you know, after the release. I've never been anywhere near what's being described here in the release of the documents. Nothing in terms of nefarious behavior. Well, that could be taken a couple of ways. What is they perceived to be?
It's a little subjective.
Yeah, what does he mean by nefarious behavior? And I've never been anywhere near. Well, where have you been? Nobody ever outright says no.
I mean, I do take some comfort in the fact that there is clearly an investigation going on. There is clearly an enormous amount of work being done on this, and it is very much in motion right now. So something is going to happen. We don't know what it is.
And it has happened. We've got people who have pled guilty. We have people who have been indicted.
And more is going to happen. Yeah. And it's still going. And the outcome of this investigation is really going to be pivotal on all levels.
We are out of time. My apologies. We're out. We've used up our time. Let me take the few moments we do have to thank Libby Post, Barry Lewis, Terry Gibson, Alan Chartok, and, of course, your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be back with more program after this.